This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
Are you moral relativists, you who are too moral to brag about it? I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, welcoming you to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. This show is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We are the nation's largest association of freethinkers, that's atheists and agnostics. We work as a watchdog to protect the constitutional wall of separation between church and state.
And this is the weekend of March 17th and 18th, 2012. And Free Thought Radio is broadcasting from Madison, Wisconsin, and podcasting everywhere.
Our guest on the second half of today's show will be Mitch Kale. We've had him on before, but there's an exciting new development in his story. He's the activist from Hawaii. He was last year's Freethinker of the Year. You might remember we named him. The Freedom From Religion Foundation gave him an award for ending prayers in the Hawaii Senate. During that time, he was roughed up. He was prosecuted for protesting prayers, but those charges were dropped. And this week, he won his lawsuit, his civil lawsuit against the Senate for manhandling and jailing him. And he'll be on the second half of today's show to talk all about that.
Unconstitutional government prayer will be the theme of our show today.
But before we get to a lot of news about that, this is the last chance you have to sign up for the Reason Rally. We hope to see many of you there at the Reason Rally in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, March 24th on the National Mall. It starts at 11. I think stuff's going to be starting at 10, but 11 o'clock, and it's going all afternoon. Annie Laurie will be there. I will be speaking, and I'll be playing a brand new song. Many of your favorite freethinkers will be there, including Richard Dawkins, P.Z. Myers, Taslima Nasreen, Jessica Alquist, Adam Savage, James Randi, Michael Shermer, and then the group Bad Religion will be there, and the musician whom we've played on this show before, Tim Minchin. It's going to be a full roster. There's full information about the Reason Rally at the website reasonrally.org.
So you can look for us and the Freedom From Religion Foundation's booth in the big tent. We'll have a free drawing for clean, what we call clean money, pre and God we trust. God-free $1 bills all the way up to 100. So sign up if you want a chance for that. We'll have a very cool photo op opportunity. We're not going to give what that is away. We'll have lots of free decals that you can put on your clothing, placards to hold, bags, materials, copies of Free Thought Today. Look for our staff. We'd be very glad to see you.
Also, this is the last chance for you to reserve tickets for a special post-Reason Rally Gala, honoring atheist and progressive author Barbara Ehrenreich. Her most recent book is called Bright-Sided.
Barbara Ehrenreich will be receiving the Emperor Has No Clothes Award for her very forthright advocacy of atheism for 3 decades. And I remember when she was a columnist for Time magazine and publicly identified herself as an atheist in an era when there were very few public figures willing to do so. And we know she'll have some choice words about the current theocratic bent of the primaries and the war against women by the church.
So sign up today if you want to attend this dinner party. Meet us and meet some of the FFRF staff. You can also purchase some souvenir books and T-shirts and attend the book signing for Barbara Ehrenreich.
After she gives her acceptance speech, and that's the evening of March 24th at the Washington Court Hotel. And we want to let you know, if you're on the East Coast, FFRF doesn't get to the East Coast that often. We're Midwest-based, so this might be one of your few opportunities to attend an FFRF function on the East Coast. Go to FFRF.org/reasonrally. support us, honor Barbara Ehrenreich, and we will be cutting the meal ordering off after this weekend, so try FFRF.org Reason Rally.
This past week has been really busy for us. A lot of new members, a lot of reaction to the Freedom From Religion Foundation's historic full-page ad in the New York Times, which ran on March the 9th, which was our open letter to liberal and nominal Catholics telling them it's time to quit the Catholic Church. We've been getting a lot of calls from people, pro and con. I got a call from the editor of a Catholic magazine. I think it was the Catholic Herald or something in London. He called and he's writing a story about our ad. And he says, now, can I ask you, I gather from the tone of this ad that you and Annie Laurie Gaylor are both lapsed Catholics.
Lapsed. No, so what'd you tell him, Dan?
I said, well, no, Annie Laurie was raised as a third-generation non-believer, and I was a former evangelical minister.
Yeah, and my mother would say, no, she did not raise us. She let us grow up on our own, and we just grew up free from religion in our family. Now, it's always a very busy week for Freedom From Religion Foundation's legal department, and one of the most common complaints that we get is prayer. Prayer in the government, prayer in the schools where it does not belong.
And now here's one of our complaints. This is coverage by WSOC-TV in North Carolina about one of our many complaints about the inappropriateness of government prayer.
Be with us today.
The sound of prayer is once again filling the halls of the Rowan County Government Center. Today, the Board of Commissioners there ignored a deadline set by the ACLU that demanded the county leaders stop using Christian prayers to open their meetings.
And new at 5, Eyewitness News reporter Dan Torgman was inside that building this afternoon. And Dan, you found out that organization isn't the only group upset over the county's actions.
We just got word that the Freedom From Religion Foundation is now investigating and might consider a lawsuit if commissioners here do not stop praying in the name of Jesus. The Supreme Court ruled the act unconstitutional, but today hundreds of people showed up to hear the board pray anyway.
We will proclaim.
His words were deliberate.
All names as the only way.
Rowan County Commissioner John Barber even paused for effect and then uttered the name that everyone came to hear.
The King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, Jesus Christ.
More than 100 people replied in affirmation.
Thank God I am free.
As hundreds more filled the lobby of the county's administrative office to voice their support for their commissioners praying in the name of Jesus.
I can look at issues and move a little bit and maybe use the word compromise, but this is one I cannot and will not compromise on.
That stance, the complete opposite of what the ACLU hoped to hear, the group sent a letter asking the board to respond by today to its request to stop praying. As the board met, we also learned that the Freedom From Religion Foundation might soon get involved too, and a lawsuit is possible in light of a recent Supreme Court ruling which found prayer by commissioners in Forsyth County, North Carolina, unconstitutional, and at least a few people here agreed the prayer should stop.
This country is not a Christian nation. This country includes Muslims, Jews, Hindus, people of all faiths.
Of course, a lot more people in here today did speak out in favor of continued prayer, and we've heard that some have even offered to chip in financially if the county gets sued. In Salisbury, Dan Torchman, Channel 9 Eyewitness News.
Well, that'll go far. Now, people of all faiths and people of no faith. And I want to say that, you know, we're making these complaints all the time, particularly in the South, but FFRF took a very major complaint about illegal sectarian prayer at the North Carolina legislature. And this has not gotten a lot of publicity, but at the end of February, we wrote Lieutenant Governor Walter Dalton, Senator Phil Berger, and the Speaker of the House, Tom Tillis. We sent a strong letter of complaint about illegal sectarian prayer, and we appended 38 pages of transcribed prayers in the House. There were 28 pages of prayers in the Senate last year. And legislators there routinely invoke the Christian deity, Jesus Christ. They recite Bible passages. They sermonize. And the opening of sessions with sectarian prayer, as that reporter pointed out, is unconstitutional. There have been 3 or 4 decisions by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, which has jurisdiction in North Carolina and South Carolina, saying don't have sectarian prayer, and they're not listening very well to the Fourth Circuit. When you are in the North Carolina House, you're asked to rise and stand, both in the Senate and in the House. And there were 84 House prayers last year that we reviewed, and almost all of them referenced Christianity. There were 74 Senate prayers, nearly all of them Christian in nature. And so we have a very major complaint going before the North Carolina legislature as well. And we do expect, I mean, this is a country of law, and I don't know why the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals doesn't mean anything to these prayerful legislatures.
Because they have a higher law, they think.
Right. And so we have pursuing a lot of complaints.
So there's a whole lot of religion going on in government. Coming up, we'll look at increasing attacks on secular government at the state level. And then we'll be back to talk with Mitch Kale, who was fighting the battle of church and state to stop government prayer in the Hawaii Senate, and just this past week prevailed in suing over his being manhandled by the Senate as a conscientious objector to government prayer. Stay tuned.
We got to fight the battle of church and state, church and state, church and state. We got to fight the battle of church and state, over the wall come a tumbling down.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio. Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of atheists and agnostics, and we work for state church separation. And we hope today you'll join us at ffrf.org.
And on today's show, we're talking about the divisiveness of governmental prayer.
And I want to talk a little bit about a complaint. We have about three complaints to cover, but we are contesting the Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear's use of public resources to promote a totally inappropriate governor's prayer breakfast in Frankfurt on March 6th. And what happened is we got a complaint from a Kentucky resident who showed us that the governor's website was touting the prayer breakfast. It was called the governor's prayer breakfast. There was no suggestion anywhere that it was privately sponsored. It was kind of shades of Rick Perry's inappropriate prayer event in the summer. And then we found out from another employee in Kentucky that Beshear, who's a member of the Disciples of Christ, had used the state email to invite all state employees to attend that breakfast. And that's actually a violation of Kentucky policy that forbids soliciting money for religious or political causes or advocating religious or political opinions or endorsing political candidates by email. And so we have a complaint pending before the Kentucky Ethics Commission over that violation.
But the governor's not above the law, is he?
Apparently.
We have a complaint going in South Carolina. There's actually a big push in that state, which we're complaining about, to have a state day of prayer. Here's a little bit of coverage about that from Fox News in South Carolina.
Katie, this certainly isn't the first time we've heard about a day of prayer here in South Carolina. Charleston Republican Chip Limehouse first proposed it in 2010. Now, that was shortly after a federal judge declared the National Day of Prayer unconstitutional. That lawsuit, though, has since been thrown out. But the idea of a South Carolina Day of Prayer is still alive and well and has plenty of critics.
Some would argue prayer should be reserved for a traditional house of worship, your own home, or personal time. But some are bringing prayer to the State House. A measure that would make the first Thursday in May a state day of prayer sailed through the House last spring, but still faces hurdles before it's law.
We really don't feel that it's the state's job to be legislating something as deeply personal essential to religious liberty as prayer.
The Columbia Coalition of Reason questions the mixing of church and state. The more secular-minded group went as far as posting a billboard in Columbia last fall to let the non-religious in the region know they are not alone. And the coalition isn't alone in their opposition to a state-mandated day of prayer.
Separation of religion and state, it should be separate, but I feel like because of the region that we're in, that will never come about.
I think that they need to worry about our standings amongst the United States as far as education and the schools, as far as dropout rates, whether or not children are actually passing the classes. That's more important than whether or not they're praying.
A panel of Senate lawmakers was set to take up the day of prayer issue Tuesday, but instead got hung up on debating the merits of video poker. The prayer measure died off in the Senate in 2010, and opponents wouldn't mind seeing prayer pushed aside again.
The state and the church should be kept separate, and that's for good reason. The church shouldn't be interfering and telling the state how to run its business, and likewise, the state should not be telling the church how to run its business.
Now, because lawmakers did not get to the item Tuesday afternoon, the state day of prayer issue will likely be taken up again next week by the Senate Judiciary Committee. Now, a group called the Freedom From Religion Foundation initially sued over the National Day of Prayer. They say a state-level proclamation would be even more vulnerable to legal challenges.
Now, it's one thing to have this in the Bible Belt, but we are seeing the same push up north, Pennsylvania, this week. Pennsylvania General Assembly introduced an outrageous resolution to recognize May 3rd as the National Day of Prayer in Pennsylvania, which doesn't make a lot of sense. Why would you have a National Day of Prayer in a state? And of course, that's to coincide with the National Day of Prayer that Congress calls every year and the president proclaims and that FFRF had litigated, and we had the world's strongest case got thrown out on standing by the Seventh Circuit, but we are still going after this in other ways. And so in Pennsylvania, they introduced what they called a non-controversial resolution, 609, to call for this day of prayer.
And so that, of course, means they wouldn't have to debate it, right?
Right. It's a way to sneak it in. It makes it uncontested, and it's placed on the calendar to be voted on by a single roll call vote. And this is how they sneaked in the House resolution that we have protested, calling 2012 to be the year of the Bible. And FFRF is planning to take action against that. So we're seeing this, kind of retroactive push for prayer at the state level all around the country. And we want people to complain. We need to make a fuss. When a politician or public official that you've voted for or who represents you exhorts you to pray using the public time and dime, this is inappropriate. And they can pray on their way to and from work, but they don't need to pray as part of their secular government position. And, of course, we've gone into the history many times about the National Day of Prayer. Dan, whose idea was it?
Well, that was originally Billy Graham's idea in the early 1950s to bring religion into the government to fight the common enemy at the time, which we know who that was.
And he wanted to recognize the Lord Jesus Christ. This is all in the record. And, the religious groups, the Christian groups, go bananas over this every year. And they have exclusionary Christian events on Capitol steps, and they get all the governors to issue proclamations, and now they're going after the mayors and the county execs, and I guess the dog catchers next. And it's a big rallying cry for the religious right, because they want there to be a union between religion and government. What better way to do it than to proclaim a National Day of Prayer and tell citizens not only to set aside an entire day for prayer, but to exhort you to pray, and even to have the nerve to tell you what to pray about. So we are, hope that this is not something that will be seen in other states, but it is not just a Bible Belt issue.
I debated the sponsor of the Pennsylvania resolution, Saccone was his name, and when I pressed him on this mixing of religion and government, he said, oh no, we're not mixing religion and government. We're simply acknowledging if atheism had been a big part of our founding, we would acknowledge that. But atheism hasn't really done anything for the United States, he said.
Well, of course, it has. I mean, our founders were deists. And who was the guy who wrote the Oracle of Reason?
Ethan Allen.
Ethan Allen was an atheist.
Yeah, and then, of course, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and women's right to vote. All of the progress that has been made by non-believers, which Should they declare 2013 the state day of atheism?
Well, that or state year of atheism, that'd be all right with me. I'm Annie Laura Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barger.
And who's coming up?
Stay tuned. We'll be talking with a state church activist from Hawaii. His name is Mitch Kale. He was roughed up. He protested, but he eventually won, not only legally won on the constitutional issue, but he won a very important civil settlement from the state. So stay tuned. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and our guest from Hawaii is Mitch Kale, who is a longtime civil rights activist. He formed with Holly Huber and others a group called Hawaii Citizens for Separation of State and Church. And they're very, very active in Hawaii. And he's had many, many important victories. He challenged a steel cross on Schofield Barracks, a U.S. Army base on Oahu, and sued and won. And he's had many other major victories, including last year persuading, through education, the Hawaii Senate to drop their unconstitutional government prayers. And those who attended FFRF's National Convention would have met Mitch. He won the 2011 Freethinker of the Year Award, and his speech currently is in Free Thought Today, the March issue, that you can ask for a complimentary issue at 1-800-335-4021. It's a lot of fun. And we have Mitch back on the show because if you heard him last year, you'll know that he was arrested, roughed up and arrested for making a conscientious objection before the Senate in 2010. And that criminal charges were dismissed, but then Mitch turned around and filed a federal civil lawsuit against the state of Hawaii, and we're just delighted that last Monday there was an out-of-court settlement, and we'll welcome you to the show, Mitch, and have you tell us the details.
Well, thank you for that nice introduction. It's been a long and interesting road here in Hawaii over the years. About 16 years now we've been doing challenges here in Hawaii.
I like how you call your group the Citizens for the Separation of State and Church. We do the same thing. Instead of church and state, we like to switch it around.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense.
And now we should what we should do is play that little clip we have of you protesting Senate prayer so everybody can hear
what you were arrested for. Listen to this.
Father, we thank you for this day. We thank you for your love for us and the opportunity to be in this place.
My name is Mitch Kale, and I object to this prayer on the grounds that it is a violation of the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. I object.
And now, Mitch.
That was it.
Now tell us what happened.
Well, it's very interesting because most people consider a legislative session, and anybody who's been to one knows, that the public is generally there only to observe. It's called a closed forum. And the only people that are really, in general, allowed to participate are the legislators themselves, and they have to follow proper decorum. They have to be recognized before they can even speak. But what is very interesting about our case here, and I'll just back up for a second, I was dragged out of the Senate chambers, out onto the rotunda of the Capitol, thrown to the ground. My cameraman friend, Kevin Hughes, was attacked by Capitol Security and the Sergeant at Arms, and I was subsequently arrested and prosecuted over a six-month period before my wonderful attorney, Bill Harrison, convinced the judge, and I was acquitted of the charges. But just backing up to that moment when I stood up and objected, what is very interesting, and I think that state church activists should pay very close attention to this, and that is because when you go into a closed forum, but then they invite the audience to participate in a prayer, what it does is it temporarily creates a limited public forum. And if you can say amen to a prayer, then you can say I object.
Yeah.
And we have had two judges now. The judge in my criminal case said that I had every right to object under those circumstances. And then now we had a federal court judge say the same thing.
Now, so what happened is that they, what did they charge you with?
I was charged with disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and obstructing government operations.
And you were just sat down afterwards, and that was it. It was supposed to be over, right?
That's right. And what's interesting about this is that I had, prior to making this objection, which was the final day of the legislative session, we only have a part-time legislature here. They only go for 3 months.
Oh, you're lucky.
Final day. But throughout the session, I had written letters to the president of the Senate saying, you know, the prayers you're doing are unconstitutional, and I want you to stop doing them. And then I tried to call her on the phone and left messages at her office. And so basically I was attempting to petition the government for a redress of grievances, but they closed off every avenue by simply refusing to respond to my emails and refusing to return my phone calls and continuing with their Christian prayers. And so I was left with only one option, and that option was to petition them right in real time at the very moment that the violation was occurring. And I have to say, the judges are buying it.
Hmm. Now, you informed them in advance what you were going to do, didn't you?
I did. As a matter of fact, the day before I did that objection, they received an email that said, if the prayer violates the Constitution, meaning if it is a sectarian prayer, you know, none of us even like the Marsh v. Chambers decision at all. There should be no prayer. But if it violates, that I was going to make the following statement. I was going to say, I object. My name is Mitch Kale, and I object to this prayer on the grounds that it violates the Constitution of the United States. I did exactly that, and then I sat down quietly. I was sitting peacefully in the gallery when the sergeant-at-arms came up and simply started grabbing my arm and trying to drag me out. He couldn't do it. So he called a sheriff deputy over, and the two of them got me to my feet and escorted me or ejected me outside. And that's where the fracas started, because I was thrown to the ground. And then after they realized that they had just been seen doing that on a video camera, they turned around and attacked the cameraman, smashing the camera on the ground.
So they knew they were doing something wrong.
They absolutely knew they did something wrong. But the problem for these guys is that none of them had received any proper training. First of all, they didn't understand what probable cause was. They didn't understand the definition of disorderly conduct, which, by the way, is not just making speech or actions that government finds objectionable. It has to be a truly deliberate attempt to disrupt something, to be disorderly. Just simply stating something like, I object to a prayer, is not disorderly conduct. And so they weren't properly trained in any of these things. They didn't know how to use force, and they took force and turned it into excessive force, and then that turned into assault. And so it sort of was a runaway train, and that's the reason why they had to pay a significant judgment. The judge, in fact, insisted that the settlement exceed six figures. The judge insisted. They were offering five figures. And the judge says, no way, I will not accept any settlement that doesn't exceed six figures. So if you want to settle this lawsuit, it's going to be $100,000 or more.
And so that was just settled on Monday. But first you had to be acquitted. And that acquittal came about a year ago, didn't it?
Yes, it came 6 months after the event. The event took place on April 29th of 2010, and the acquittal was in November of 2010. And we filed our civil lawsuit about a week later. So we're now about 15 or 16 months into our civil suit, and it's going to keep dragging on. There's no doubt about it.
It seems to me that those guys...
I thought it was a settlement. Isn't that finished?
No, that's what I mean. It was going to keep dragging on, and so the judge was very, you know, this particular judge, and I have to, once again, I need to thank my attorneys, Stephanie Marn and Jim Bickerton, who took this case pro bono, and they were behind us 100% of the way, and they did an excellent job of convincing the judge that A, the state could never win this case, and B, that it was in everybody's best interest, the taxpayers and ours, that this case be settled. And once again, the judge sided with us and simply insisted that the state come up with a reasonable settlement.
Now, it seems to me that the reverse should have happened. The real lawbreaker at that session was the preacher who got up there and violated the Constitution. Those thugs should have gone up and forcibly ejected him from the room.
Well, that's one of the problems, is that there's such reverence given to ministers that when they go up and they speak before a government body, even if they start going off, just going off with a blatant unconstitutional prayer about Jesus, nobody will ever stand up to them and say, you know, excuse me, Pastor Bob, you need to stop with this prayer.
Well, and also, maybe not in Hawaii, but we just wrote a letter of complaint to Oklahoma where the chaplain of the week went off for 20 minutes against gay rights, anti-abortion, political statements.
Yes,
before the
prayer. They use this platform, which they all claim that they're honored and privileged to have. That's the first thing they always say. I'm honored and privileged to be here. Then they turn around and use it as a lobbying platform. There was, when we were doing our civil unions law here in Hawaii, some of the preachers would start out with, God created Adam and Eve, one man and one woman, and then read from the book of Genesis. Now, that is blatant political lobbying in a privileged platform.
Now,
and so, that has to be stopped.
Before we take a break, I think that we need to clarify that somehow in the middle of all of this, you prevailed. Your act of civil disobedience, your educational efforts prevailed in the Hawaii Senate because they did stop prayer. Isn't that right?
They did stop prayer. They no longer have prayer. They have not had prayer for 2 years now or since that time, and it is a wonderful thing to go to the Senate. I've been down there many times this year, and to have them just start off with the roll call and go right to work. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, get off your knees and get to work. That's Dan's little litany. Well, I'm Annie Laura Geller here with Dan Barker. We are talking with Hawaii activist, state church activist Mitch Cale, who just won a $100,000 settlement for being roughed up, his civil liberties violated when he protested illegal prayer in the Hawaii Senate. And reason has prevailed, and he has prevailed, and they have dropped the prayer. So we'll be back to talk with Mitch in another minute.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio. Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laura Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. And we're back. We're talking with Mitch Cale, an activist for state church separation, who just this past week won a settlement in a federal civil lawsuit in which the state of Hawaii was found guilty of violating Mitch's civil rights.
And Mitch, just to recap, on Monday, there was an out-of-court settlement of $100,000 for the pain and indignities they put you through. And they was it basically found to be false arrest when you protested prayer?
Our lawsuit was 18 counts. And among that was false arrest, was malicious prosecution. There were a lot of counts. And of course, the settlement, we obviously, part of the settlement is that in exchange for a payment of $100,000, plus they had to do, there was some injunctive relief attached to this. They had to put everybody through training. Sheriff deputies and sergeant-at-arms all had to go through training because of this. And, of course, there's a general awareness now that you can't rough up protesters just because you don't like what they say.
What a concept.
But they had to do quite a few things. But obviously now one of the stipulations is that we're going to dismiss our lawsuit with prejudice, so it's going to be gone.
Are they going to make them actually read the First Amendment?
Well, I understand. We haven't gotten all of the certificates of the training that they've had yet. That's part of the deal, too. They have to provide us with all the certificates. And I understand that part of that is, understanding the law, whether or not that's an understanding of criminal law, things like what constitutes disorderly conduct, or if it's constitutional law. You know, I think the constitutional aspects are probably a little too heady for these guys to understand.
Now, you've stopped prayer by the Hawaii Senate using persuasion. I know that you have been busy protesting Christian prayer to open Honolulu City Council meetings. What's going on with that?
Yeah, the City Council no longer has prayer either.
Really?
Fantastic. Yes,
wow, they, okay. Yeah, wow, they, you have a running streak going, a winning streak going.
Yeah, and we just want to get to the House now. The House has instituted new rules, and those rules limit invocations to 2 minutes. And they also are very clear in stating that they can be, you cannot use sectarian language. It cannot be seen to proselytize or advance or disparage any religion. So in other words, they have to, and it very specifically says you have to stay within the limitations of Marsh v. Chambers. Now, there have been a couple of minor violations in the last year in the House that we've recorded. And obviously, if the House continues to follow the rules and do a much better job than they used to, because it used to be every single day it was an overt Christian prayer, then we probably have settled that controversy to about the best of our ability. I mean, I would love to see the House cancel their invocation and get rid of it, but, you know, they don't have to under the law, so we can't force them to do that.
Is the public there when they're doing it?
Yes, the public is present in the gallery, yes.
But it is, it's also the law that there is no law that they have to pray, so they could drop it.
Absolutely, they could drop it. There's nothing that says that they have to have an invocation. It's a choice of the majority caucus. They decide to have an invocation. What they were doing, though, was having a blatantly unconstitutional invocation. And now with the threat, what they have over them now is the threat of myself or any other citizen who might decide to do this. You know, my wife also objected to the prayer on that same day. Holly did. So the bottom line is that they know that if they break the rules, that someone might object, and we could see this whole thing play out again in the House. I'm happy to do that if that's how they want to play it.
Now, Mitch, during the break, you were saying that you have an exciting new campaign. What is that?
Well, actually, you know, my partner, Holly Huber, is a data analyst and a database programmer, and she's really excellent with the sort of analytical side of data. And we decided, after the New York case recently, where the city of New York had banned churches from functioning in their public schools,
mm-hmm.
we started to look into the situation here in Hawaii. And what's really interesting about that is that Hawaii has a state school system. So all 300 public schools in the state of Hawaii are all under the same administration, one Department of Education that sets the rules for 300 public schools. And so what we did is we went and looked at the rules for public access to the use of public school buildings and facilities of grounds and found that the state has a very strict set of rules. If you want to use the government facilities, you have to follow very specific rules to do so. Then we used the Freedom of Information Act to obtain 575 contracts between churches and public schools in Hawaii. There's actually 130 churches operating in Hawaii.
Wow.
Public schools.
They're really setting up shop.
And we obtained every single contract. And we have been meticulously going through those contracts and doing a report that is extremely detailed, showing where churches are not following the rules. And basically what we believe that we're going to be able to do, I can't predict the outcome, of course, but our goal is to see a fair number of these churches evicted from the schools based on rule violations, not based on the First Amendment, but based on violations of the rules.
Are they paying rent?
They are, but they are paying far less than they're supposed to.
So
it's really it's, you know, it ends up being quite complicated because, like I said, every church has its own contract with the individual school, so the contracts are all different, but the rules of the Department of Education are all very specific.
Well, we have run out of time, and but you're not running out of state church victories, Mitch. Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mitch. This program is produced in Madison, Wisconsin. We want to thank Ben Yonke, our producer, and Buzz Kemper, our announcer. Find out everything you would want to know about this show at ffrf.org/radio.
Become a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. It's tax deductible. It supports our educational efforts at fffrf.org. You can phone 1-800-335-4021 if you want more information. Ask for a sample issue of the March paper that has Mitch Kale's acceptance speech as Freethinker of the Year. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday.